Hi everyone, this is a second helping of Hannibal, and I am Matt. You're about to listen to the second part of our recap of Season 3, Episode 12, The Number of the Beast is 666. We're going to pick it up right where Chilton gets kidnapped by Francis. So if you haven't heard the first part of the discussion yet, you can find it in our previous episode. Okay, here we go.
Okay. So, we now again have a little Chilton humor before the axe falls.
Yes, and this was such a funny, dark scene. We've got Chilton popping out of the elevator, talking into a phone like the most hackneyed type of pompous authority. Just a parody of a celebrity. There's these big, giant, hulking bodyguards with their hands under their jackets, hands on their guns, walking around him. He feels so secure. He's being ushered to a limo. He just feels like he's at the top of the world. Gets in that limo. Blood spatter, and he just gets yanked sideways out of the limo. And that was... to me, that reminded me of like a vaudeville gag, like Frederick's getting the hook.
Yep.
And that's the last funny thing that's going to happen.
There's a couple of specifically funny things. Of course, he's talking anti-Hannibal talk here, right? Mm-hmm. And essentially, without knowing it, anti-Dollarine talk. He first of all says the name of the book refuting Hannibal's refutation is going to be Blood and Chocolate, which he's mentioned before when they were having Sanguinaccio Dolce. He says that Hannibal's current demographic are the people who like to read about alien abductions, and he is about to be abducted by an alien. Mm. And he also says, we know who his fans are. And that's the moment Francis's arm. It's hard to know what to call him now. He's really the dragon now. He's got a little bit of Francis, but it's mostly the dragon right now. And by the end, it's all the dragon.
I think if we're going to refer to him as Francis, it's wishful thinking. Even in my own notes, I'm going back and forth between calling him Francis and the dragon. We are still hoping... even though obviously we know how things go, that all of this stuff doesn't have to happen. It makes it worse to rewatch this show in a way, knowing what's going to happen and seeing all the near misses. You don't have the surprise of what happens, but it feels more tragic just knowing that there were chances for this all to go better.
So, do you want to describe what's happening here?
Yes, this is a variant of canon in which the original Freddie Lowndes character, who's a male reporter, wakes up to find that he's been tied to a chair by the dragon. Glued to a chair by the dragon. In Manhunter, this is a terrifying scene because it's the first scene where we see Dollarhide with that crazy stocking over half his head, and he's wearing that robe, and it's a really, really scary scene. But the Freddie Lowndes character in Manhunter is an odious asshole who you kind of know he's cannon fodder when you meet him. This is a variant of that. Chilton has been an odious asshole, but over the years now, we've gotten to know that he's also sort of pathetic and has suffered a lot of physical pain and emotional pain for this group of people that he's become associated with. So he wakes up glued to the chair. The dragon wakes him up with smelling salts. So obviously he's been knocked unconscious. So he's disoriented. And he wakes up with smelling salts, disoriented, and he's naked in the chair. And he's Google-eyed. Like, he does not know what's going on here. He is not just disoriented, but he's probably compromised because he's had a concussion. And the first thing that Francis says to him is, "Would you like a blanket?" And then doesn't wait for an answer and says, "I'll get you a blanket." There's something so incredibly scary about that being the first thing that Francis says. It's treating him like a child. It's showing how Francis is insane because he's glued this captive to a chair and he still wants to give him a blanket to make him feel more comfortable because he wants Chilton to feel comfortable in a way to receive the information that he's about to receive. He also wraps the robe around him like he's coronating him. And this is the second time, by the way, in this episode, something I wanted to bring up with you earlier in the scene where Will and Chilton pose for that photo. Jack goes behind Freddie.
Oh, yes.
And looks like he's going to position her almost. Like it almost looks like he's going to grab her.
He positions the camera.
But his hands are behind her. And that's really reminiscent of what we see here is the dragon's hands are behind Chilton. There's this sense of manipulation of this situation by other people, and Chilton is just really the one being most manipulated.
Can I just also say about the blanket one more thing?
Yeah.
Again, of course, putting a blanket around someone's shoulders always reminds me of Psycho and in
Norman Bates.
Norman
at
Bates
end,
getting the blanket. But back in season one, after Will vomits up the ear, Hannibal comes and puts a blanket around Will. Mm-hmm. And it's when he's doing the most horrific thing he could possibly do to Will. The most horrific, more than stabbing him, really. He's making Will think he's an insane murderer. Mm-hmm. And yet he's doing this thing that's caretaking. And we sort of see an echo of this here. Like,
yeah.
He is about, the dragon is about to do something so horrific to Chilton. And yet he's doing this gesture that's almost like maternal and caretaking. And when he puts his hands on his shoulders, it's like really this moment of he could snap his neck right now or just pat him.
The incongruousness of the gesture makes it that much more terrifying. If Chilton didn't think he was in trouble, this is a bad way to wake up.
There's another thing which also is that this is the continuation of Will having touched Chilton's shoulder.
Good point. Yeah. He is there because of Will. And of course, Chilton says, "My back hurts. Did I get burned? I hope to God I have not been burned." And Francis just says the word burned, burned, burned over and over again.
Burned? Burned.
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 Ugh, it's terrible. You just think Chilton should not have said that. He should have said something like, "Please tell me you're not going to give me champagne and send me to Hawaii," right? Like, if he only sent that, maybe everything would have been better. But he gives Francis this idea. It's the worst thing he could have said.
We're also seeing Chilton in the foreground in this very, it's like a Demi type of close-up. And his terror, I mean, this performance is really amazing. His terror, the terror on his face and the terror in his voice are so palpable. And it's only after this burned remark that we actually see all of Francis in the robe and the knit cap pulled all the way down over his face. And
all the way down.
Fucking terrifying.
It's really scary. That whole head stocking. And Chilton, his performance is really amazing here. Now, he's glued to the chair. I guess that's canon, right?
I think it is, but also within the show, it does take you back to the Eye of God mural people. We've seen this same shot.
James Gray, the muralist.
We've seen the shot of the arm trying to pull away and the strings of glue, you know, adhering him.
That's what felt valedictory to me about this. Mm-hmm. Not so much valedictory as everything is now coming together. Mm-hmm. This is the ultimate manifestation of all these relationships. It's all gelling here. And there's elements of everything else that's happened are now converging, unfortunately, for Chilton. With his body, he's glued, he gets burned. You know, there was that burning prank before. Mm-hmm. I want to look for more clues here. I just feel like we're going to see things that are going to remind us of the mushroom killer, and we're going to see things that are going to remind us of Tobias. I just wonder how many elements of different killers are starting to float in around here. Mm-hmm. But man, and Chilton, you know, he's still a trained psychiatrist, and yep. You see he's doing all the things that you should probably do in this situation. I don't want to know who you are. I don't want to see your face. All of this is to say, look, you can let me go. You are in no danger for me. But while that might be the right thing to say to try to defuse a situation, it's the exact wrong things to say to Francis. He wants you to know who he is.
Yep.
He wants you to see his face. He wants all of that.
Francis tells him he's there because he's atoning. Like, atonement is a different goal than, oh, maybe, you know, I want to just do something randomly violent to you and I can let you go because you can't identify me, right? It's yes. He, in a weird way, right here, has the same sin as Chilton. They want to be recognized for their greatness.
But Chilton recognizes that. He does say to him, all my readers mm-hmm. can be made to understand you too. Mm-hmm. And he says, you don't need to scare me for me to be impressed. Mm-hmm. Chilton is trying to use these tools. He does have enough perception to recognize that Francis is self-aggrandizing and might be persuaded to let him go if he says he's going to tell the whole world about him.
Yes, an opportunity to understand you, my readers could. Do you feel privileged? And he says, it is a privilege, but I have to tell you, I am scared. Man to man, I am scared. This really reminded me of something in Silence of the Lambs. When
yes.
they're watching the senator on TV and she keeps, well, I know you're a good person. My daughter's name is Catherine. And Ardelia and Clarice comment on she's using techniques to humanize her child to make it harder for Buffalo Bill to kill her. Again, yes. not useful in that case either, although it's a valiant effort. And Chilton's really making a valiant effort here.
He is, but Francis doesn't fall for it. He says, man to man, mm-hmm. come on. Mm-hmm. And look, I don't know. Do we go through every line in this scene? It's so difficult. It's so scary. It's so awful. Francis is Chilton is begging Francis not to show him his face.
I mean,
he's begging.
Francis leans over him at one point. And
terrifies him.
There's one thing where he leans over to the side and it is like an animal, right? It's like an animal saying, like, let me smell this. Let me see what I want to do with this thing. Do I want to play with it first? Do I want to eat it first? And the man-to-man line really fails. And there's a real reason Chilton used that line. But it also shows his limitations in the same way he was showing his limitations of understanding when he was talking to Freddie and doing the psychological profile, right?
He's, Francis's reaction is, thanks, but I'm not a man.
Yep. And I know what you're doing.
Yes.
You're trying to show me how, you know, straightforward you are. I'm not a man. I have become other and more than a man. And do you think God is in attendance here? And he has his hands, like, not touching, but around Chilton's head.
Like it's, the way Jack had his hands around Freddie. It's just so terrible. He terrifies him by speaking into his ear with his creepy black head.
And telling him God's not there, and Chilton sort of goes the wrong way. Oh, I pray, but when I'm scared, we pray when we're scared, but then we forget about it, and I shouldn't, and
then this is canon. You will look at me, or I will staple your eyelids to your forehead. And then there's another sitcom gag here. Ding dong.
Oh my God, the ding dong was so funny. I couldn't believe it. And you know what? You needed it. Like, I was sort of glad because the tension is so high and this scene goes on for a very long time. But the ding dong is followed by something even more horrible. Like, you think you're getting respite, much like Chilton thinks maybe he's getting respite, but you don't.
Ugh. Yeah.
So,
and Reba is here. But it's the darkest humor in the world. Ding dong. Hey, Dee.
Although there's a really interesting shot through the door.
These are great shots. It makes both of them look like the tattoo patterns on his back, right?
Distorted. They look distorted. Yeah.
I thought the whorls looked like the whorls on his shoulder blades.
Well, maybe. I'm going to look again at that. I didn't think of that. You may be very right. Like, I just took it as, like, these are two people who had a connection, but now everything's just been completely distorted. It's this weird glass, this weird warped glass,
but remember, she's blind.
Yes,
and it's a visual distortion that she can't perceive.
We see it. He sees it.
This scene, I could not bear this scene. Like, it's so unbearably tense. The incongruity of what she is saying and how she's behaving to the scene she has walked into is so scary. I love this scene. Every aspect of it.
All right, well, go.
I don't like surprises. I bet you don't either. Yeah. She's got that soup that, of course, you brought me soup. It's one of the most loving things Will ever said to Hannibal.
And which made Hannibal, I think, get his first twinge of realization that he is appealing to something. I am behaving in a changed way.
Yes. It meant so much to Will and Hannibal.
And it's chicken soup.
And it's chicken soup. And she brings him soup. Everything has a double meaning. First of all, the soup looks really weirdly like a organy, right? There's these layers of carrots and layers of chicken and then all this fluid. It just, to me, it looked like a cross section of like something that's been cut. And your office said you were sick. Yeah, he's pretty sick person. Mm-hmm. And she doesn't know what she's saying. Mm-hmm. But, you know, this thing there where she walks into the room and she feels like she is having a conversation with this person who she got mad at and now really wants to take another shot at. It's so incongruous because Chilton is there in the chair. Now, I really wanted to talk to you about this performance from Raul Esparza too, or whatever direction he's been given here. He stops being afraid here, it seems. He's really intrigued by this conversation. Yes, you see the effort that it's taking for him not to just say mm-hmm. something, but suddenly it's like he's a psychiatrist listening to something intimate. He shouldn't be hearing something this intimate. He shouldn't be witnessing something this intimate. And I think as a psychiatrist, with all that's going on, it's like food for his soul. He's absorbing this information. Didn't you feel that way? He seems to be very curious about
this. I agree. I mean, I think there's a shock because his experience is of the dragon. And now he's seeing there was a person there, like a person who was able to have a relationship with somebody. It's also so different from his own psychiatric profile, right? It's, and I think he's sort of thinking, maybe, is this a person? Is there a person I can appeal to? He said he's not a man, but look here. I just think his brain is just like, this is such an incredible, bizarre, seemingly out of character thing for this person to be doing, and the expression on his face is really interesting.
And everything she says, every line of dialogue of hers here, I feel like is a blow to the head. Yep. I'm not so scarred by life that I'm incapable of love. I hope you aren't either. He's wearing his fucking mask right now. This is so bad.
And scars are what he's about. Like, his facial scar is just a reflection or the reason for all of his internal scars. And he is too scarred by life.
He is too scarred.
Can I ask you a question? Yeah. I have two. Well, there's also when she says, I've learned withdrawal can be a strategy to avoid pain. It was, but it was to avoid pain to her.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so sadly ironic. Like, she's saying, you withdrew from me because you thought you'd get hurt. But he was honest with her. He withdrew from her because he thought she would get hurt by the dragon. And
everything she does and says here makes you gasp with the irony and the dark
guilty
irony.
Guilty of liking you. Like, guilty. Like, they're, okay. But this is my question. It's very interesting to me. And this is, again, despite, obviously, she literally can't see him. Mm-hmm. Right? She doesn't have the visual input that would have told her so much more about him. About that fucking house, all of it, right? But she also has known in very many ways how to deal with the person, the human Frances Dolaride, because she's come and told her, I'm not staying long, there's a taxi outside. This, in fact, allows her to escape for a moment, for temporarily, but she is also come in a way that lets him know she is not going to subject him to a prolonged, difficult encounter. That she's going to say her piece and let him process it alone. And if he doesn't want her there, he doesn't have to deal with her. It's just, she is such a good, decent person. My other question is, do you think she senses another person is in the room?
Well, there's certainly a shot that implies that she senses something. There's one shot of her kind of, if she could see, he'd be in her peripheral vision. She sort of looks in that direction.
And does he know that?
I don't know if it's a cinematic device that is just meant to make us feel disoriented, that she seems to be looking in his direction, or if she smells, because certainly she's known when Frances has changed position in the room before. So maybe she senses him there. Maybe she smells him, smells his fear, something. But she doesn't seem to be behaving in a way that says, I need to get out of here. But she also already came in announcing that she was planning to leave.
Yep.
When we started this storyline, I rewatched the movie Wait Until Dark. Wait Until Dark's Audrey Hepburn is blind. She lives in this apartment. She's gone blind and she's learning how to deal with life as a blind person. And while her husband is away on business, some people come and scam her. And because they think there's diamonds in the apartment or something like that. I just watched it and I forgot what the scam is. It's a good movie. There's some really goofy aspects to it, but one of the things that happens is there are people in her apartment. She comes home in one scene and has a phone call, and there are these burglars in her apartment standing inches from her and moving around the apartment while she goes about her business and gets ready to go back out to avoid her. And she never senses that they're there. Though later she will understand what's going on. But it's not a bad movie.
It's not great.
It's a little goofy.
It's okay. It's an okay movie.
There's a lot of... Alan Arkin plays an insidious master of disguise type.
It feels a lot like a play that got filmed, which is actually, I think,
which is what
it
is. Yes. Anyway, this did remind me of that. There's a blind woman in a room where there's other people who are observing things that they shouldn't be seeing. This is just so much more painful, though. But it has that level of tension. Is she going to step over? If she walks in that direction and trips over Chilton, she's dead. If she indicates in any way that she senses another presence, she's dead. It's not a good situation. I love this scene. It's so agonizing and sad.
It's really sad. So she leaves.
We think.
Yeah. And Francis says, I mean, this is also, Chilton is still trying. Like, you have to kind of give him credit. And he's kind of switched gears in how he's dealing with the dragon. He says, Do you want to know what I am? And Chilton says, more than anything, I was afraid to ask. Like, he's just still trying. He's like, I'm going to take a new tack with this.
Yep.
And then we have, again, this is directly out of
canon.
The canon. It's in the books. It's.
Do you see?
Yes. And it's slides of woman clothed in sun. It's a slide of Mrs. Jacoby before she's killed, after she's killed with, and then Mrs. Leeds. And it just goes on and on in the most terrifying way until he gets to a slide that's the photograph of Chilton and Will.
And that's when, just like in canon, he loses it.
The camera comes in closer on the photo, so you do have this real sense of what it's really looking at is Will's hand on his neck.
Yes, and that's where Chilton cannot hold it together anymore, because what is going to happen to him has been revealed.
Also, I just want to say, he's really talking in the dragon voice now, right?
100%.
And when he does the picture of Will and Chilton, he's screaming, do you see? I mean, it's just terrifying.
And then we get a real convergence of all the themes that we've been seeing in the show in these words that he says. Will you tell the truth now about my work, my becoming, my art?
My art.
We've always been led to believe that Hannibal sees art in these murders and that he is an artist himself. Mm-hmm. And now we are told directly, this is my art. Someone is saying, this is my art. It's more than James Gray, who was compulsively doing this composition in that silo. Mm-hmm. And Hannibal recognizing it as art. I love your work. Mm-hmm. But this is now a distillation of that. And mm-hmm. one of these killers is actually saying, this is my art. Mm-hmm. This is art. Do you see? Mm-hmm. Oh. Oh, my God.
And, you know, this is when he's saying it's Will Graham who said it. And when he says, will you tell the truth to me about my work, about my becoming?
Yeah.
My art. And then he says, is this art? And he shows the slide of the Blake slide again. And then, oh, this dialogue, which is also, this is directly from Cannon. You said, I, who see more than you, am insane. I, who have pushed the world so much further than you, I am insane. I have dared more than you. I am the dragon, and you call me insane. Before me, you are a slug in the sun. You are privy to a great becoming, and you recognize nothing. It is in your nature to do one thing correctly, and before me, you tremble. And then he takes off the mask, and he's right in Chilton's face, screaming, fear is not what you owe me. You owe me awe. And then he strips and stands in front of the projector like he's the art, with the dragon tattoo posing. And it is fucking terrifying.
It's terrifying. I think of all the versions of this, this is it.
It's so scary. And I think it's almost scarier for the addition of Reba having interrupted the scene.
Walked through? Absolutely.
Because like she's walked through hell without knowing it.
But this is another one of these things that made me think about the scale of what all of these people feel is going on and the real world scale of it. He says, I've pushed the world so much further. I am the dragon and you call me insane. The bottom line is he is insane.
Absolutely.
And he hasn't pushed the world further. He's killed a bunch of people.
And this isn't art in the way that you could maybe I mean, in a bizarre way, you can say what Hannibal does is art. You can say what James Gray did was art. This isn't. He's a madman with a specific grandiose delusion, and he's just making death.
Yes. That is, in a way, what I feel like is also so tragic about this. Reba grounded this situation in its reality.
Yes.
This guy is nuts.
Yep.
And Chilton is the unfortunate victim of an extremely crazy person.
Yep. Yep.
And the profundity of the emotional journey that Hannibal and Will are on now does feel really profound, because that's a love story, and that is
Francis is profound too, in that it shows you what can be done to a human to make them this, to lead them here. You know, as we've said, we are really often in Will's position of feeling empathetic to the brutality of his existence, what's been done to him. And yet here we're also being told, but look at what it produces. Yeah. And it's very reflective of what's going on with Will throughout this episode, where he's dealing with both of those things again. He's dealing with the understanding, the identification, the empathy, his own impulses, and a response to the outcomes it produces. Okay, so yes. We then cut to like him with the lunchbox and the thermos and just saying, oh, you're going to need this for your journey on ice. We'll need that. And then, but before we go, we should tape a little. I thought this was sort of interesting. You had mentioned Jack kind of adjusting the camera angle. Jack was doing that to send a message to the dragon. This is where Will Graham is, right? Then you see Francis, the dragon, whatever we're going to call him now, setting up this camera, positioning this camera to send a message to them.
Back.
Yeah.
And giving rather mundane directions. Speak right into the camera.
Uh-huh. Look at the lens.
Look at the lens. He like Will, in a way, can move back and forth between just saying normal things and being completely bananas. Wow, this is really tough.
Go ahead.
Well, just the fact that there's a cut. We don't see what he says and we cut. It just tells you we're going to see this later. Mm-hmm. And it's not going to be good. Mm-hmm. There's something about the lunchbox and thermos too. Again, like the blanket, it has the trappings of care. Here's your lunch. Here's your drink. You almost feel like he's acting out something that his crazy grandmother did with him, sending him off into the world with this stuff. But it's obviously this twisted version of caring.
But it leads Chilton into more of a belief that he's actually going to be let go. Like he says it. Like he shows him that lunchbox and thermos. They do the taping, and then he's like, "You did very well."
Yeah.
And Chilton believes he's going to be let go, and then.
But you know what?
There's one way I can help you better understand, and then the fucking mask goes on, and the teeth go in.
Yeah. And then, of course, this is the most truly disgusting thing we've seen happen on this show.
Well, first of all, he climbs over the furniture like an animal. Like a
fucking animal.
He moves like an animal. I'm going to just take us out of this for a moment because you remember I told you there was something in that cut with Chilton reminded me of Buffy's episode Harsh Light of Day. There's also a very, within fandom, famous scene in Harsh Light of Day. It's not a scary scene. It's a sexy scene where Spike
crawls
up the bed, and it's referred to as the Panther Crawl. And well, he really moves here like a cat, and this is a very different use of a very similar kind of movement, like a predatory animal.
It's really not good.
I mean, there isn't anything worse than this in the whole show, right? There, this is it.
There's nobody who is made to dread what's going to happen as much as Chilton is.
But I mean,
visually,
it's, I think, is it the goriest thing we've ever seen? More than Mason eating his face?
The kill, I think this is as bad as, because Mason eating his face, there was something funny about it, and it was shot from a distance. Yeah, and it's a macro close-up, practically, of Chilton's lips being ripped from his face and him screaming in total agony.
With his bloody maw. Like, it's just, bloody mouth. See it, and then.
And you see the sinews, and you see the, it's a real Dawn of the Dead, you know, it's kind of the canonical George Romero, Dawn of the Dead kill is that zombie bites someone's neck and pulls it out, and you see the sinews kind of like, you know, sticking and then snapping. And that's what happens here. This is just the goriest close up.
And it's
gore.
Not quick.
How is this on TV?
It's not quick. It's not quick. And he spits out the lips into his hand.
I know.
He's not eating them because they have to go someplace, and we're going to know immediately where they're going because we cut to the mail, and Alana comes in delivering a package, and again, Hannibal treats her snotty like a secretary and says, "Oh, hand delivered," and he does that same performative walk that we saw in the last episode to go get the package. And he opens the tissue wrapped item and it's the lips. And now this is Hannibal in all his glory. He looks right at Alana with pure happiness. The note says, "With these, he offended me." And we cut to Hannibal trussed up on the dolly, and he could not be happier. "Dr. Chilton often offended me, so I certainly understand the sentiment." And he's just looking with total amusement between Jack and Alana. Just total amusement. I love this.
Like that time he was at the dinner table watching.
Yes, but even better. Feud. Even better. Again, as you said, he is trussed up. He's on this dolly. He is 100% in control. Jack is holding out the one lip at like he's a waiter serving food, which I love, because he's like, "Where's the other one?" And this is just the best cut ever. It's a quick cut to Hannibal slurping the lip into his mouth. It looks like he's staring at Alana while he does it. It's hilarious. And it's horrifying, but so hilarious. And also, Hannibal's managed to eat human flesh while he's incarcerated. Like, he's still managed to eat human flesh. It's just such a funny scene. He's so happy. It's so creepy and weird. Yes. But he's so happy. And
the quick cut, by the way, also looks like just the devil with a forked tongue,
oh my
like
God.
Slurping into his face. Remember toward the end of The Tenant when the Roman Polanski character is really losing his mind and he sees the other tenants in the building as demons with forked tongues flicking in and out of their mouths? It just happens very briefly. It really reminded me of that. You get a flash of devil tongue in a way. And this big smile he's got on his face.
Jack wants the other lip, but Hannibal's really happy. And he says to Jack, "Oh, this one can give you everything that the other one could." It's like, "Oh, I've been professionally courteous to you. I've left you enough to do your work with."
Yes.
He just keeps looking forth between Jack and Alana. "I'm sorry, Jack. The tragedy of what's happened to Frederick has put me in an excellent humor."
Excellent humor. It's really something.
And Hannibal now, with complete pleasure, calls everyone out on their culpability and their intentionality. "You pretended to burn Freddie Lenz in a wheelchair to flush me out. What were you pretending to do with Frederick Chilton?" So it's like, Jack, you know exactly what you did. You put him in danger.
Interestingly, we don't know what's happened to Chilton exactly yet. We hear about the burning stuff. We haven't actually seen it yet.
Yes, yes. Alana says, "We wanted to enrage him." And Hannibal looks at the lip and says, "Congratulations."
Yeah.
It's so good. And then he's not letting Alana off the fucking hook. You could have provided anything. Then it would have been your lip I was tasting again. I just wrote down, "Ooh, snap."
She's so not that Alana anymore. She's just a very different character now.
But she tries to obfuscate, right? "You discredited him. You orchestrated his end by proxy." And he's like, "You did, right? You did it." And then he says, "That's professional discourtesy."
Yeah, not only that, he slips the word discourtesy in there, which we know is a death sentence.
Cardinal sin.
Yeah. It's very, very clear.
We then see the film of Chilton being watched by Alana, Jack, and Will about the great privilege of seeing the great red dragon. "From my own lips, you will learn a little more to dread." He said this before it happened.
So the thing about his pelvis, too, he's talking about breaking his back just above the pelvis, which would render him
crippled.
Impotent and incompetent.
Yes. Yep.
And I feel like incontinent,
yes.
Sorry. which I feel like that's a direct response to the things he said. You think I'm impotent? Mm-hmm. But wait till I break your lower back.
Will watches this and he breaks down. He's covers.
Okay, now why does he break down? What do you think? He breaks down and then looks up with a look of resolution and indifference.
Because he can experience everything simultaneously.
Yep.
He did this and he feels the pain of what happened as a result of his doing this while he wanted it to happen. And that's why Will is so fascinating to us and fascinating to Hannibal.
Exactly. I love that scene for that reason. It's another incident in this episode of Will experiencing the disorienting mechanics of feeling both things at once.
So Bedelia is, he's in therapy with Bedelia. She says, do you want to discuss this?
So hilarious. It's such a great cut because she's just, do you want to talk about what happened with Frederick Chilton?
It's like saying, do you want to talk about what happened with you yelling at your boss this week? Do you want to talk about what happened when you weren't honest with your wife about, you know, going out with your friend? Okay.
But they're also infused with Hannibal.
Yes.
He wanted the world to know his face. And Bedelia's like, and now he doesn't have one. They're making the same jokes that Hannibal was making.
Hannibal puns. It's like Hannibal puns again. I do think it's interesting. Will says this thing about the divine punishment of the sinner mirrors the sin.
Mm-hmm.
The sin being punished. And she refers to that as contra passo. You play, you pay. Contra passo. Did you look that up?
No, I didn't look up that word.
So contrapasso is from the Dante's Inferno.
And
it is the idea that in hell, there's really one few rules in hell, but one rule is that the sinner's crime, the sinner's punishment
mirrors the crime.
So this was like, I think one of the things they point out in Dante's Inferno is like these people who sort of pretended to be soothsayers or future seers were damned to walk with their heads facing backwards. So on their bodies. So
I see. Great.
Yeah. So Will says this line, damned if I'll feel.
I love that line.
So tell me what your thoughts are about that line.
So I think it just has two meanings here in the way that we were just saying Will is now capable of having both experiences at the same time. Damned if I feel is one way of him showing I'm going to show resolution in the face of what happened to Chilton. I am not going to feel anything about this.
Not going to feel guilty.
I'll be damned if I feel guilty about this. On the other hand, I am damned by my feelings.
Yep.
And
Which made this happen.
Okay. And so I think that's what's happening there. Will is, he's just experiencing both right now, the damnation of empathy, but also the arrogance of what he's done and the pleasure he takes in others' damnation.
I like the exchange that comes after this because it actually does feel like a therapeutic, you know, bizarre world therapeutic conversation again. She says, we're making our way through the inferno like Dante's pilgrims. And then Will plays off that and says, no, we're pets. And the great red dragon kills pets first.
Yeah.
And she then talks about what it means. She's sort of prodding him to say, what did it mean when you put your hand on him? And Will obfuscates. I put my hand on his shoulder for authenticity. She says, or maybe you wanted to put him at risk just a little.
And she looks so stoned and high when she's saying this. There's something about the way she is having this interaction with Will that seems to fill her with this glow messianic glow almost.
Yep, I agree. She's really slow talking, even for her, right?
Yes.
And she says that, did you want to put him at risk just a little? And he looks unsure and says, I wonder. And she says, do you have to wonder? And then his face just completely resolves and he says, no. And you get this superimposed shot of Chilton sort of in extremis behind him. What did you think the Great Red Dragon would do? You were curious what would happen. Is this what you were expecting? And then in this very wry way, Will just says, I can't say I'm surprised. He's admitted here that he created a scenario in which this was a real possibility, and he knew it was a possibility at the time he created it. And that I think Will was curious. I think the reason Will didn't mind this result is because Chilton is worthy of the lamb's retribution.
And I think Will also doesn't care about how bad it got for Chilton.
Now.
He didn't know Chilton was going to get set on fire, obviously. But he knew something bad was going to happen to Chilton. And when he says, I can't say I'm surprised, with such pleasure with that scene of Chilton being set on fire, superimposed, and then immediately after dumped into the fountain in a flaming wheelchair, he is ignoring how horrible the fate was for Chilton. It's not even like, oh, maybe he'll get shot in the head and it'll be clean.
Mm-hmm.
He's bemused by something way worse than a quick, simple murder. And Bedelia says to him, you may as well have struck the match. She knows this lesson better than anyone.
She was
That's
taught
participation.
It in these specific words earlier in this season, which seems like a lifetime ago.
But she also does not let Will off the hook. She says, Hannibal has agency in the world. He has you. You are Hannibal. In this world, you are one and the same.
Yep.
And that's that.
And again, we have this superimposed image of the lipless screaming and being set on fire and the wheelchair rolling to the fountain. And it cuts to a match like being struck, reflected in Will's eye. And I think we are being told that Will absolutely foresaw this, even this specific possible outcome.
It looks like he's doing it.
Which means he's moved to a place where Hannibal told him he should have been before, with when Hannibal told him all these clues about what would happen in the future, about his family being attacked by the dragon. You know, it was like, you should be able to see what's going to happen, and now Will does see what's going to happen and chooses to facilitate it and allow it to unfold.
Yeah. And something really cool about this transition to his conversation with Jack here is Jack is standing in front of him, but he's kind of garbled and abstract right now. Will really isn't. Will's here in the world of murder and death and mayhem and what he's caused to happen to Chilton. And he has to kind of remind himself, I have to carry on this conversation with Jack. Jack could have been standing in front of him like for 15 minutes talking to him. And finally, Jack's like, are you okay? Mm-hmm. As if he's worried that Will is anxious about what's about to happen with this going to see Chilton. Will is just, he's on a different plane now. And
well, I have a question about this.
Yeah.
Because when Jack says, you know, he did Chilton the way we pretended to do Freddie Lowndes, Hannibal said he would in his own way. And Will says Hannibal told him to. Well, Hannibal didn't tell him to. There is no point at which Hannibal could have told him to. I think Will's talking about himself.
He is.
He's so melded with Hannibal that it's as if Hannibal told him to.
Exactly.
Will told him to.
Yep. Yep. That's why I like the cut to the way that it dissolves into Jack's garbled voice. Like mm-hmm, Will's, mm-hmm. He, it just shows that he's, it's not, it's almost like Will's not standing in front of Jack.
Mm-hmm. But then on, at, by the same token, Will is expressing this theme, this thing about, you know, I'm okay. I had the SWAT team, you know, like Will, no, Will is still the part of Will that's saying, I took care of myself instead of taking care of this person, right? This other person. Mm-hmm. And then we go in.
Although, of course, Chilton had some pretty serious bodyguards too. And that
They
all know this.
Yeah. And we see Chilton.
Oh my God, is he a mess?
He's just a burned husk. And Will kind of has to, he does look away. Because again, these things are all operating him in him at the same time. But what Will says is, I'm sorry this happened to you. He's obfuscating. And once again, as every time in this episode, when someone tries to disavow responsibility, they are confronted by it. And even this husk of Chilton is able to confront him and says, you set me up. You knew it. You put your hand on me in the picture like a pet. And I love that Will is required to translate and repeat this because it is making him take ownership of what was done. It makes him take ownership of his own actions. We've talked many times before about this, about the show is so often about therapy, and therapy is so often about articulating something, and the articulation of it makes you understand it and accept it as a reality. And I think that's happening here. And Chilton is a psychiatrist.
Yeah, absolutely. And now that you're saying this, it's occurring to me that what Will is doing here, you set me up, you knew it, you put your hand on me in the picture like a pet, saying those words on behalf of Chilton, a couple of things. One, it's a pretty exact thing to say. Will didn't need to be told this. He's saying the things everyone already knows. But also it's an inversion of Will's crime reconstruction style. When he's reconstructing a crime, he walks through the scene and goes, I did this. I did that, I did this, I did that. It's almost like he's reconstructing the crime here through the eyes of Chilton and being made to apply this to himself in second person, right?
Yes, yes. So Chilton, despite his precarious state, does indicate that there was a blind Black woman present, and Jack immediately connects that this must be the person, Reba, that he mentioned during the phone call with Lecter. And then we cut. And I
Can I go back to one line, though?
Yes.
When Will says, I'm sorry this happened to you, it is something that Chilton has to correct him and say, no, you did this to me. But he's also showing his blending with Hannibal. Will also believes this did just happen to Freddie, and that the fact that he was the instrument
to Chilton, Frederick,
and that the instrument of this was the fact that he was the instrument of it was incidental. This is the way Hannibal talks about things happening to other people.
Oh, you're so right.
This happened to you. So it's both. He thinks a force of nature did this. Yeah, it was me, but it happened.
Yep.
It just happened.
Yeah.
And it just shows how Hannibal Will is right now.
I think we get this cut to Reba trussed up in the van. And I think this is the very last instant we see of anything of Francis.
Yeah.
Because he puts his hand on her sort of as if to calm her or just give her a sense of safety and connection. And then he carries her into the house. He lets her sit up. And she kind of starts doing the same thing Chilton was doing.
Absolutely. That's what I love about this scene.
She's just,
I'm glad you care about me so much.
But you scared me. And he says, I love it. I'm going to tell you something that's Sermon on the Mount important, Ten Commandments important.
He says, shut up to her.
Well, he is the dragon now.
Yeah.
He is speaking to her completely as the dragon. His speech is perfect. He says, shut up. And he's also saying, I am telling you, he is giving this a religious epiphany I am going to share with you. And this is just terrible. Remarkable events have happened. She doesn't understand what he's talking about. And he says two groups of people were changed. The police think they were murdered. You know what they call the being that visited those people. And she starts to say the tooth fairy, and he puts her hand in, he grabs her face so roughly. Just
watch it.
Answer correctly. And she says, the dragon something, red dragon. And this shot is so scary. He just looms over her, and his mouth opens so wide. And he just says, I can't do the voice.
Yeah.
But it's the dragon's voice. He says, I am the dragon. And he steps back and the wings unfurl. And it's terrifying.
It's terrifying and cements how far gone he is now. She is not going to be seen by him as a person, because the last time he had his wings out, when she was in the room, he folded them up really quickly.
Yep.
And now that is not happening. It's yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
But, you know, again, this contrast between his self-aggrandizement and the reality of it. I am the dragon, and she's just like, the dragon something?
Mm-hmm. He says it's been in the news a lot. Like, yeah. He can't understand how it's possible she doesn't recognize what he is.
Right. It's remarkable to think what she must feel like when she now realizes that the dragon something is this person, and he is so deep in this that he thinks whatever he's going to do to her next is of biblical importance.
And that it's about change and not death. The police think they were murdered.
He doesn't even
think he's killing. And also, I mean, I don't remember if Will has this conversation with her in the series where he's very kind to her after the fact. But, you know, she said, I'm guilty of liking you. And now she just must be thinking, like, this is my punishment for being guilty of liking him. What did I get myself into? Who was I with? I was as intimate as a person can be. And look what he is. Look what I couldn't understand about him. I didn't even sense it. You must feel so... And she must think, if only I could actually see, I would have known, which may be true.
1,000,000%. She might never have been with him in the first place. His behavior is so visibly odd and off-putting. And the minute she walked into that house, she would have, of course, said, I'm never coming back to this place again.
I'm in Norman Bates' house. Oh. Poor Reba.
It's very sad for her.
Because she really lives now. And
she's the only character of all of these characters left. Alana, Jack, Will, Chilton. They're all twisted. They're all demented by their association with Hannibal. Reba is a visitor from the real world. I know, but
she'll never trust herself again, ever. No,
she will be changed. But I just mean at this moment, at this point in the series, she's the only visitor from the real world who would look at all of this stuff that's going on and say to herself, these people are all nuts.
Yep.
And she doesn't have that luxury of having had time to digest all this. She's just dropping in from another place into the middle of hell.
It's an alien abduction.
Yep. Oof. Oof is right.
All right. Well, we will be back having spent almost 3 hours on an hour
on
which
recap.
Was an hour of which was on the pre-credit sequence. We will be back with additional thoughts and see you then.
That was a longie.